This podcast episode is powered by AfriPods, the world's number one podcasting platform for African stories.
Hi guys, it's a beautiful evening. Welcome to again another episode of We Are Curious. So if you're new to this, We Are Curious is usually a roundup of activities in Kenya, Africa and the world. And here we get to, you know, discuss and share opinions on matters. And today we want to talk about a few things that happened in Kenya. First of all, we have the possible closure of Base Titania because of depletion of the ore, and then we have the low business confidence for February evident in the recent PMI. And we'll also discuss a little bit on the minimum tax and how it is impacting businesses. The minimum tax has been active for the past, I think, 2 months. This will be the third month for the minimum tax. At a regional level, we will talk about Tanzania's economic growth for last year compared to other countries, as well as touch on a little bit on the projections for Kenya. And then globally, we'll talk about the big news, you know, Square acquiring Tidal and Square acquiring a banking license this week, as well as Google's announcement to sort of stop advertising cookies in Chrome. Welcome to today's show.
Thanks, Ali. So maybe just to get things started, as usual, we always have a look at the markets, how they're performing. So over to you, Eric. So just to look at what has been the market mover this week, what sort of news have moved the market, and what do you think yourself about NMG especially? I know we had a discussion about it last week, and there's been some massive news today, if so to speak, in terms of just them getting the NBA sort of exclusive partnership. What do you think about the market this week? What have been the key themes, and what do you anticipate as we move on to the next week?
Great. So it's been quite a ride for National Media Group in the week. Part of that was driven by announcement that they made a few weeks ago that they want to implement a share buyback plan.
Yeah.
That drove the share price to nearly 60%, more than 60% since then. Looking at the stats, week on week, NMG is up by 57.45%, which means last Friday that share price was, that counter was trading at close at 16 shillings and 10 cents. And then closed today at 25 shillings and 35 cents. So if you got in, imagine if you got in last Friday and you exited today, you could have made your money and now probably go do your own things. To spice that up, then NMG today announced that they entered into an arrangement with the National Basketball NBA
Association
to stream NBA matches for free live on their main TV channel, which is NTV. And I don't know what that means for the company's revenues and bottom line. Unless Eric, you have any views, because you are a big fan of the NBA.
No, I think for me, and now I start to understand why they did the share buyback, because it feels like, from a strategic point of view, and I think we've had this discussion a few weeks now, they felt that the share was very undervalued, and I feel like they also had, you know, that knowledge that and they felt confident that they are locking up a few either partnerships, or they are very optimistic on their subscription models or the new subscription business, and they felt that the share price could actually go higher. So today's announcement for the NBA again, it's for them, it's enticing totally new players or new customers to sort of get hooked on on NTV as a platform, and obviously that would translate to, say, more revenues because most of the business is centered around advertising. So if you're able to lock in more users and get more ads, then you would essentially increase your bottom line. But that could also mean that, you know, that deal was due to, I think they were unable to get the Olympics partnership. I think that was signed with StarTimes, if I'm not wrong. StarTimes were able to get Olympics. So it's sort of like NBA trying to, again, stay, NTV is trying to stay relevant with the sports audience, and thereby them looking at how to then acquire the NBA rights. But all in all, again, as we've said, much of Nation Media's prospects or share price depends on how well they perform as a digital brand. So we've seen the likes of New York Times, you know, transition, and Washington Post especially, transition very well into a fully-fledged digital business and sort of moving the print and all these other channels to the background. So if Nation Media is very is able to actually transition very well into a digital first brand, then I feel that that share price could actually head much higher up. But in the meantime, again, it's, for me, it's a wait. Something too interesting to just mention is I think today we had a discussion on Hisa app where one of the user was asking, you know, if NMG is a buy. I don't know, Eric, what you think about that?
The thing is it a good time to enter or to get out? So, for me, on NMG, I think if I was to take a position, it would be more of speculation. Because looking at that sector, given that from a business standpoint, I have an interest in that side. So, looking at the long-term nature of that business, they have been hit hard by the pandemic, given that a lot of these budgets moved from the print to digital. And it makes a lot of sense, and it was basically time caught up with them. So I don't know if it's a good time that they tried to transition into this. But one of the advantages that the internet offers the traditional media players is the power of distribution. So it's much easier to distribute your content to a wider to a wider network of people, to many people. But the thing is, where NMG should probably step up would be on the content side of things. If they are able to, if they can be able to pull, generally have good content, generate good content that people are willing to pay for, then I think there's an opportunity.
And something interesting, I think, is Sanlam is on the week-on-week gainers, but they issued a profit warning, is it?
Yeah, they actually did.
Yeah, this week. So it's interesting. Leah, what do you think about that?
Okay, interesting. The insurance sector, it's something to keenly watch on. I think week-on-week, they are around 17% high. Sanlam is 16.39% week on week. Express Kenya around 8%. Can General 8.33%. Express 8.11%. Transcentury 6.14%. Yet Transcentury, I think, they're delayed in releasing their results despite being given the extension by the CMA.
Yeah.
I think something that we can keenly, that it's more of we haven't noticed. The market at the NSE has been going up for the last few weeks. It's been going up. Looking at the NSE 20 share index, it was up 25.71 points this week, around 1.34% points to around 19.41. What I'm keenly waiting is, I'm just waiting for the NSE 20 share index to cross the 2000 benchmark. So I think that's something that I'll be keenly watching.
And again, we are headed into the earnings season. So we expect more activity. We should see again that index edging much higher than it is. And again, something to keenly watch out for as we approach the earnings season is banks, obviously. The banks have been one of those counters that have been affected by the pandemic. And as the other sectors start their recovery, it would be interesting to see what happens in the next few months.
Okay. Maybe early now, you can take us to the next topic, which is lower business confidence for February.
Yes, yes. So, how should I put this? So, so the PMI reading for February actually dipped from 53.2 in January to 50.9, which is the weakest since actually mid last year in around July, and it kind of brings questions on exactly how are Kenyan businesses recovering from the pandemic, be responding to the changes in taxes, especially from the pandemic taxes, which we had lower VATs, as well as the new taxes that were introduced this year.
Yeah, so I think for me, just I feel like both the resumption of the previous tax rates, and then those again new taxes introduced in January. So there was the digital services tax, and then there was the minimum tax again introduced in Jan. So I think the fact that businesses were hit with those extra taxes obviously is going to affect operations, and just their confidence about recovery of their businesses as a whole. You couple that together with the fact that again we are operating with a curfew in place, which has since been extended again for a further 3 months.
Yes.
Yeah, so it puts again businesses in a very precarious position, because the revenues aren't coming in as much, and there's more taxation. So obviously we still anticipate that sort of lower PMIs to continue, for at least the next 3 months before we start seeing a rebound, whereby hopefully things would have opened up. But again, the flip coin is IMF, World Bank all seem very optimistic about our GDP performance this year. So again, that's something to watch out for, just interesting to have a discussion about, given that yes, the government is looking to raise more money through taxation, but most of the businesses are actually going through a very hard time during this period.
Okay, interesting. Speaking of the confidence and the IMF's views, Citi recently put out a report analyzing Africa's economy, where part of that, what that indicated is that Tanzania's economy grew at the fastest rate among African economies.
Yeah.
Speaking on Kenya, what they said is that they do not share IMF's highly optimistic outlook on the country's GDP growth. What the city analyst described their forecast by IMF as extremely aggressive, and they expect the economy to expand by 4.9% compared to IMF's projection of 7.6%.
and remember, and you remember, IMF have just revised that upwards after they gave us the I think it was $2.4 billion loan, because initially I think they were in the 6 or 4 point something, and then that was revised up to 7.6, which again for us we feel it's extremely optimistic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Interesting. Speaking of still on the business confidence, I think what you've just mentioned about taxes. So recently news came out that the Kenya Association of Manufacturers had gone to court they had opposed the government's minimum tax, and what IMF, what the association was saying is that, look, you the government is introducing the taxes at a time when most businesses are suffering.
Yeah.
And actually, the Kenya Federation of Employers actually warned a few weeks ago that we are likely to see the layoffs continuing and even spiking when we thought things are getting better, but they won't. They'll actually, we expect to see more layoffs. But then what happens to manufacturers who the government raises tax, but then how do you expect some of these people to manage the taxes? So in the association's view is that given that our economy is largely dependent on manufacturing, and that the manufacturing industry contributes a very huge percentage of our GDP, what does that leave for manufacturers? The startups are in the manufacturing industry. So they gave their reasons for the why they gave their reasons why the 1% minimum tax will negatively impact the economy, and that and some of that was that the industry has become one of the least profitable industries in Kenya, and the main reason is because of costing. It's very expensive in manufacturing for manufacturing industries companies in Kenya to produce their goods locally.
Yeah. And I think maybe just to dissect what you're saying further and look at both of those things that you've mentioned. So first of all, on the minimum tax and the Association of Manufacturers sort of being opposed to its implementation.
Mm-hmm.
And I think experts have given their views about just that specific tax and how it is unfair for companies that have been hard hit by, first of all, the pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
And second, again, the industry itself was had its own problems. They had their own ailing problems even pre-pandemic.
Yeah.
Then the pandemic came and actually, you know, wrecked it further. So if you want to, again, introduce a minimum tax on most of the loss-making sort of industries or companies, that's already burdening a very, very burdened economy or sector. So if you look at, again, even the listed companies that are in, let's say, the cement industry. So there's a couple of listed companies that, you know, haven't performed very well since 2019, 2018, and we've seen, you know, some go under or go under receivership.
Mm-hmm.
So if you look at the big companies struggling, you know, that much, and then you introduce to them a tax. Again, it's punitive.
Yeah.
So for me, I feel like the government needs to at least have another discussion with just the private sector and the manufacturers, especially around the minimum tax. Because if you look at countries like Nigeria and Tanzania, I think TZ have a 3-year period. So you only pay the minimum tax if you declare losses for 3 consecutive years. I think in Nigeria it's 4 years, if I'm not wrong. But for us, it's, you know, you're going to pay the minimum tax on every year that you know, you're making a loss. So for me, I feel that we need more engagement and more discussions around that.
Okay.
And then maybe on the second point about Tanzania and the IMF, no, actually it's the Citi report for Tanzania. So you have to look at, you know, TZ ignored much of the pandemic and went on with their activities. So obviously from a 2020 outlook, they're going to have higher growth than the rest of the continent. But I feel like, and we've had this discussion whereby Tanzania is now, you know, getting to feel the effects of the pandemic more now because, you know, they didn't put in place those measures and all of that. So as the rest of Africa now moves towards vaccinating its population and, you know, opening up the economies further,
mm-hmm.
Tanzania is at that period where they are struggling with lots of cases. And, you know, yes, they're not locking down their borders, but they're really, really struggling. And of course, businesses, you know, and most foreign investors are shying away from the economy. So again, I feel like for them, the real impact will be this year rather than last year because they operated throughout of last year.
Mm-hmm.
As for Citi's report on, you know, Kenya being, the growth being within the 4 point something range, I think that's much, much closer to, you know, what we can expect. Because as we've said before, anything above 6.6 is extremely optimistic, given that there's debt payments that are kicking in this year. On the political scene, you know, there might be a referendum that's being pushed to happen this year. The curfew is at least extended for 6 months, so that's half of the year with sort of like 3/4 of the economy running. Costs to do with electricity are still going up. So for me, I really feel inflation again as well is it edged up in February to an all-time high and 11-month high. So for me, I feel like there's lots of things that are moving. There's lots of moving pieces that need to be curtailed for us to even get that 5% or 6% GDP growth. But anyway, I'm optimistic still as a Kenyan, but the reality is we aren't in a very, very good position.
I think with regards first to the minimum tax, there's definitely need for considerations, and I saw that the Kenya Association of Manufacturers had actually suggested a window of 5 years,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to just the grace period, which of course would make sense for loss making companies, and rather than scrapping of the minimum tax entirely, they'd actually suggested we review it down to around 0.25%,
yeah,
which would, and in an industry like the manufacturing industry where margins at the moment are down despite, you know, increasing volume, I think that would make a lot of sense.
Yeah, I totally agree with that.
With Tanzania, in as much as they did not take drastic measures through the coronavirus, compared to other countries within the region and in the world, some of the sectors that are dependent on external population. So, for example, the tourism sector was hit really, really hard. So, I think how they will be affected this year is largely dependent on how fast they move, and it might not be as bad as with the rest of us, given that in as much as they are led to the party, they will try to contain the virus at a time when we already have a vaccine rolled up. So that could be some sort of a softer landing for them compared to the rest of us. That's all I have to say.
But to date, they don't have a vaccination strategy in place.
Yeah.
I don't think they're even considering it.
You know, with Tanzania, I think it's just that even if they didn't take it's about the COVID measures,
mm-hmm.
but also the economy just continued, like they didn't close up their markets, like even to the external. You see the way we closed our borders, we were just like, no, we don't anyone here, we don't anything. Tanzania, they still continued like receiving goods from other countries, they still continued importing, exporting, like they were just running normally.
Mm-hmm.
And they will be affected this year because most of them, like, the COVID is real, yeah? People are dying. People are dying. And they didn't, like, they just brushed it off, like maybe it was just a flu or something like that.
Yeah.
And this year, like, you know, when most people are not okay, how are you supposed to produce? Production also requires labor. How are they supposed to produce? How are they supposed, how people going to trust the government when they told them don't trust that there's COVID? Then all their people are dying. People are dying on the streets in Tanzania. People are, they're really recording, like, high death rates right now, yeah? So it's like this year they will be affected,
mm-hmm.
and to be honest, they have a dictator for a president, yeah. Okay, no, he's not
a
dictator.
Do you have plans of visiting Tanzania?
No. But
anyway,
what I'm saying, like, is he going to be open to the idea of vaccinating? Because to vaccinate, he will have to admit there is COVID.
Okay.
Yeah,
he's not even there yet. He's not even going to admit his COVID.
Okay.
Himself.
And I think also the other thing would be, so once again, the COVID vaccine is going to be in the near future mandatory for travel.
Yeah.
So what happens when, you know, you have Tanzanians have to travel out of the country, or, you know, flights have to come into Tanzania. And as we saw with Rwanda, you know, those IATA COVID certificates would need to be issued, and those all those measures have to be in place at some point this year.
Yeah.
So then what happens with a country that's not on board with vaccination, or, you know, even just admitting that COVID is real? But anyway, it's something to keep an eye on, because again, they would basically also affect ESC as a block. And I think one of the things that we can touch on briefly is Kenya assumed the chairmanship of the East Africa Community from Rwanda. And to that effect, I think the president appointed, the director general? who's Kenyan now. So again, we are looking at prospering as a bloc, looking at how do we set in place the tariffs and the trade agreements as the East African community. So if you have the rest of the other countries, you know, on board with vaccination, and then you have TZ who are lagging behind, then how do you, as a bloc, tackle that?
There's something I wanted to point out on the minimum tax, yeah?
Yeah.
I wanted to ask, is it that there's no company which benefited from the impact of COVID? Because let's say when people were at home, everyone
mm-hmm.
wanted to connect internet.
Mm-hmm.
There has to be a company which recorded, like, something. Like, there has to be something.
Netflix.
Most of these companies, okay, there's Netflix. But let's say the truth is most of these companies were already
mm-hmm.
facing losses even before
yeah.
COVID came. Most of these companies wanted to lay off people even before COVID came.
Yeah.
So they used that as an excuse. It was just like a catalyst, like, okay, now this is the reason we are going to use. Everyone is just talking about COVID. What was the performance of the company before?
Yeah.
Is it that they are being taxed unfairly, or is it that the government knows you are supposed to benefit from this thing? It's not
mm-hmm.
that it all affected everyone. It didn't affect everyone.
So now here's the problem.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll take again manufacturing for instance.
Yeah.
So we had lots of companies that were already either making losses or their businesses were being affected by lots of other external factors. So for manufacturing, I think the key things for them is cost of production, which is largely dependent on electricity, which is again absurd.
Yeah.
So the fact that their cost of production is high, then the pandemic came,
mm.
and obviously it brought their businesses to a standstill.
Yeah.
So you see, from their point of view, they would have expected the government to shoulder them more, in form of at least put those incentives or policies in place. To make sure, just let me finish, to make sure at least say things like the cost of production is brought down
yeah.
for them. You understand? Because it's something
it's
that
true.
They've been lobbying for
mm-hmm.
even before the pandemic. But then what happens is the government, yes, reduces the tax for everyone
mm-hmm.
for 6 months till the end of the year. Then in January, the taxes go back
mm-hmm.
to the usual, and then they add a minimum tax.
I will do that if I will go to the government. Because how are we? You know, there's this thing about Kenyans. Every day, you all want the government, please help us. The government, please help us. The government, please help us. You're being helped. Now put yourselves together
mm-hmm.
and know what is going to be your way forward. You
mm-hmm.
can't always be deciding, like, the government, please. They're also trying to collect revenue. And
mm-hmm.
how are they going to do that without taking taxes from you? There was like such a big waiver because I was
mm-hmm.
talking to someone I know
mm-hmm.
and she was like, hey, my payslip has suffered. That Nini was, the relief they put on tax was actually very important. But when he pushed that initiative,
mm-hmm.
people didn't even, that time nobody applauded the government. Like,
mm-hmm.
yeah, they are doing something great. They were like, yes, we deserve it. Then now, yes, you also deserve to also put yourselves together. We can't
mm-hmm.
always be asking the government, please do this for us. The
mm-hmm.
government, please give us relief. The government, please give us more money. Please
mm-hmm.
give us more time. Till when?
So would you rather the manufacturing industry as a whole fell and we saw...
It won't fall. You know, the thing with Kenya is this. It won't fall. People
exactly.
will complain, but it won't fall. You will see. People
mm-hmm.
will... People are just complaining. Then
yeah.
after a while, you see higher. People actually had money. That is all people in Kenya are. It's like we are just hiding. Then
mm-hmm.
when someone is like, they push us. That's
mm-hmm.
when you... come out with your potential, because I support the government. You can't always be like every day we are like, please government, please do not tax us, please we need more time, please till when?
But then here's the thing, yeah, I think my biggest concern
mm-hmm.
with regards to the meaning, I agree with you, we need to find ways for the government to collect more money.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
then as we do that, we also have to make sure that we do it creatively enough so that we do not cripple the very businesses that we're supposed to make money from. And I think my best example here would not even be the manufacturing sector, it would be startups.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine you yourself, Leah, here, coming up with a really life-changing product or a life-changing innovation in Kenya. You are a young person, you're still bootstrapping, you're not at the point where you've attracted investments, or maybe you have. Most of your costs right now are R&D. You've not even started making money, but then you're already required to start paying taxes for money that you have not started, you know, making. You get. for startups, it cripples young businesses before they're even able to, you know, to walk and run. And I think that is sort of the same sentiment with the manufacturing sector. It's quite a small sector, by the way, which contributes
10%.
Yeah, over 10% to the KNGP, and it's anticipated to actually grow all the way to 15% by next year. But then see, if the sector is supposed to produce more revenue, it's supposed to grow. If it's supposed to grow, then we are supposed to give it kidogo enough room to do that. And we're not saying that you don't tax them, but then kind of be a more considerate in the taxes. Because here's the thing, yeah, the sector looks for margins around 4 to 5%. So 1% would mean something.
Yeah.
And I think, again, if you're talking manufacturing or specifically in this case, so one of the model manufacturing economies is Ethiopia. And if you look at what the government has done in terms of policies to enable that sector, and why, and you get to know the reason why most companies are actually shifting the manufacturing processes and industries to Ethiopia. Because first thing is the electricity is, I think, a third of what we pay here, just the production cost. So at the end of the day, it gets to a point whereby it's extremely cheap for even you, maybe as a Kenyan company, to produce your goods in Ethiopia and bring them to Kenya and sell them here than it is to produce here. So you see, at the end of the day, until the government addresses such issues, manufacturing is never going to be to contribute the 15% that they target, you know, to the GDP in 2 or 3 years. So yes, there needs to be concessions from both sides, but I feel at the moment where we stand, it's extremely unfair to most sectors beyond just manufacturing and startups in the country with all the taxes and everything.
You know, speaking, mentioning of electricity, Kenya. Kenya Power is planning to set up charging stations all over the country. Asuma,
I feel like they listened to our podcast. Then they were like, yeah, let's do this.
Mm-hmm. I've said this before.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's even a discussion that we've had with the lawyer. Let Kenya Power first solve issue with distribution of electricity in the country before they move to. If they set up electric charging stations right now, how many electric?
Well, there's a Tesla. There's one Tesla in the country.
For one Tesla, can you imagine all the money they have used? You know, they will tell us they have used some absurd amount of money and tell us, oh, that's what is costing them a lot for one Tesla. Can we first solve the problem of the million Kenyans who we are facing, then this one person with a Tesla, he had a plan. Or she had a plan. The person
thing.
Had a plan.
I actually read the story of that one person, that one Indian man who has a Tesla, and
mm-hmm.
He charges it from his house with a three-phase, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I think Kenya Power is being a little bit visionary, which is okay, given that EVs are definitely the future, but then there are more immediate problems, you know, to look into, given that also Kenjin announced that it will also set up charging stations. And honestly, I think I'd let Kenjin just run with it.
Yeah, I think that there's a consensus on this table. But we need a full session on Kenya Power to run.
All right, more on a global scheme, and I know, Eric Jackson, you've been really, really waiting for this.
Mm-hmm.
What is Jack up to? Square decided to acquire Jay-Z's Tidal, and Jay-Z joined Square as a board member.
Yeah.
What do you think Jack is up to?
I think to, you know, just to take it back and just look at Jack Dorsey himself as a person and as a CEO. So so Jack is concurrently running Twitter and Square, which is first of all very impressive, because both are listed companies, and he's managed to sort of just maintain their market cap and share price, you know, stable. You remember when Twitter banned Trump? Oof, that feels like years ago. And we all had, and I remember you, Eric, you woke up to the, I think it was around what, it was like 10% drop in share price that morning, and you were very worried and thought, you know, this was the end, the beginning of the end of Twitter. But what Jack has done since then is quite extremely sort of what ambitious. So if you look at Twitter, they've had this 13 or so years period where they, you know, they've just been everywhere, just doing nothing about monetizing their space. So they tried ads, which doesn't bring in as much revenue. But if you look what they've done this year is they've acquired, first of all, they acquired, I think, Revue, the newsletter platform. So that basically allows a platform like Kenyan Wall Street, who we have a very large of following on Twitter, to use Revue newsletter for all our comms directly to our customers. And then besides that, I think they've also been exploring internally working on Twitter Spaces, which is, you know, the Clubhouse, their answer to Clubhouse. Because again, if you go to Clubhouse, most of the creators or the people, moderators leading the sessions are basically the people on Twitter. So Twitter felt like, you know, they can monetize that space quite quickly. They're working on other features like the super follow, you know, and just finding out ways in which to actually monetize the platform. And I'm quite confident that, you know, they'll actually figure out a way to monetize that platform.
Mm-hmm.
Then you look at the other company, which is Square. And Square is one of those interesting companies that we've been very bullish on, because I think, first of all, they have Cash App, which is the P2P transfer app, which obviously also accepts Bitcoin, which is very, very, very interesting and important. And then they now recently acquired Tidal, which, as you know, is the music streaming service that was founded by Jay-Z and a couple of artists, where artists are also co-part owners of the platform. So bringing Tidal and Square together is just basically allowing artists to, first of all, get access to, say, the infrastructure, the payment infrastructure. Because again, earlier the week, Square had announced that they actually got a banking license.
Mm-hmm.
So again, you look at all of those things, if you look at those things separately, they look disjointed. But now if you put them together, you find that, you know, Jack has managed to bring culture, which is, you know, Jay-Z and the brand Tidal, together with finance, whereby you have Square getting the banking license. And then you're able to leverage tech and now BTC to be able to actually power a community which can be able to generate revenue for themselves. So look at it this way. So you have an artist who wants to, let's say you have an artist who wants to record their song. So they basically use Square's banking license to get a loan, which would allow them studio time to produce the songs that they want. Then those songs would be put on Tidal, where they would be co-part owners of Tidal, the music streaming service. So Tidal would handle, Tidal through Cash App or Square would handle the collection of funds that those artists get, basically as royalties for as long as their songs are on the platform, and handle out the distribution of that music. And then at the end of it, the artist can do merchandise, you know, they can print their t-shirts, sell them directly to fans in an OnlyFans model way of things. So basically it's connecting artists to their fans in a simple way and enabling payments where they can actually thrive. So I feel like for me, it's one of those things that is really a game changer in the way we look at content, content creators and communities, and earning cash from their trade.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I think for me, what stood out, it's been a good week for Twitter. I think first they acquired a banking license.
Square,
which is a massive move. One of the things that you have to acknowledge, Jack and Jay-Z are one of the best, one of those, not the best, but one of those most iconic entrepreneurs of our time.
Yeah.
Jay-Z bought Tidal in 2015 for about $56 million.
Yeah.
How much did they sell it for?
297. And that's just majority. That's not the full thing.
Yes, that's the just majority.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Then he joins the board of Square.
Yeah.
Massive.
Plus, you know, it's still part stock options
mm-hmm.
in Square,
okay.
which again, Square is going to be a massive company.
Yeah.
Again, for me, if any company is bullish on crypto
mm-hmm.
as a whole,
yeah.
I am also bullish about the company itself.
Mm-hmm.
So Square is one of those companies to look out to.
They've actually been increasing their stake, their holding of Bitcoin over
yeah.
the last couple of weeks.
Yes.
Which I think probably it's part of this. I think Jack had a plan.
Yeah.
Part of the plan was, how do I make it easier for these creatives to get paid online?
Mm-hmm.
And crypto would be one of the best ways to
absolutely
make the payment,
yeah.
make payments online.
Yeah.
So I think it's a good move. It's a good move.
Coughing MicroStrategy.
No. Oh, MicroStrategy. Man.
He decided to buy another 205 bitcoins for 10 million.
Yeah.
And that is
when?
Today.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Oof, I don't know, man. MicroStrategy is just it's either they're just on another level, man. I think at some point they'll get to 99% balance sheet just worth of Bitcoin. But it's actually one of those biggest votes of confidence by a public company that I've seen.
Actually, the CEO some time back went to the press and said he might actually take a loan to buy more crypto.
Mm-hmm.
So, which means he's overly optimistic about the price of Bitcoin in the long run.
Yeah.
But then, what do you think of MicroStrategy now holds about 91,064 Bitcoins,
mm-hmm.
which is a good thing given that we all know that Bitcoin is the future. But then, given its volatility, what do you think this does to its balance sheet? Again, despite the fact that MicroStrategy's stock has soared up to close to 97% in the past 3 months.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. The thing is, a lot of these companies will have to hold Bitcoin as part in their balance sheet.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that I think we should expect very soon from what I've been reading online is that Netflix might be the next company to actually buy Bitcoin and hold it as part of their balance sheet.
Speculative.
Yes, of course, very speculative. But I think that would be a boost for the crypto.
Do you know what would take
mm-hmm.
Bitcoin's price to the moon? Warren Buffett getting in.
Speaking of Warren Buffett, on Saturday,
mm-hmm.
Warren issued a very anticipated annual letter,
mm-hmm.
Warren Buffett's annual letter.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's been doing it for more than 3 decades now,
mm-hmm.
and investors are always looking out for the annual letter.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of things stood out. You see those investing fundamentals, like invest for the long run. And one of the things that he mentioned is that, look, never bet against America. I think that's what stood out.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing was that Berkshire, the companies holding in Apple stock,
yeah.
actually, despite offloading some shares, is overly optimistic, is very, very bullish about the company.
Mm-hmm.
The returns that they got in the company since they first made an acquisition of about 10 million shares in 2016.
Mm-hmm.
Then they've been increasing that stake. They have sold part of that, but they have made their profit,
yeah.
which includes, I think, a 400% gain in the share price, in addition to dividends and the splits that happened.
Yeah.
So,
and I think Warren, again, he's just an exceptional, investor, because I think they made about 750 million from their Apple holding last year, which again is massive, massive.
Mm-hmm.
But you also look on the flip side, and I remember when he dumped all his airline stocks, and people were like, you know what, for once Warren doesn't know what he's doing. And maybe they're right, because again, airline stocks are up about 80 something percent since their all-time low when he dumped them. So for me, I feel like of course Berkshire is still going to have these years where they have stellar performance, and I think the Apple holding was really, really key to driving just the entire holding of the company. But you know, if we had, you know, just imagine if we had Warren saying, you know what, I'm not such a pessimist about BTC anymore, BTC prices would actually shoot to the moon instantly. Mm-hmm. Then I think again early late last week, no, the other week, Citi also released a report on Bitcoin. They called it the tipping point, which basically looks at, you know, is Bitcoin at that point of mainstream acceptance, or, you know, is still just another speculative implosion. And I think one of the few things, or one of the stats that are in that report, and for me personally, I feel like that report is the tipping point for Bitcoin, because you look at Citi, and Citi, you know, releasing a report on a major commodity, mm-hmm. Is actually telling the whole world, or the whole finance world, to actually take a notice and have a look. So in the report, you know, they mentioned that about 36% of small businesses in the US are accepting BTC, started accepting BTC in 2020. And there was about $536 million worth of monthly BTC volumes in South Africa and Nigeria, up 55%. Again, same discussion we have every week. Nigeria has been the second largest Bitcoin hub after the US in 2020. And you look at how much BTC is being traded on a day-to-day, is about 20 billion, you know, early in 2020. Mm-hmm. And there's lots and lots of numbers that just make you look at BTC as a country, and you actually start, BTC as a currency, and you actually start to appreciate the massive adoption that it's actually been getting. So for me, I feel like it's actually at that tipping point where we more adoption, as you mentioned. There's speculation about now which is the next publicly listed company that's going to put BTC on the balance sheet, and, you know, the Coinbase direct IPO coming up, again, that's going to massively increase the trust and the the sort of understanding of cryptos as a whole. So for me, I'm extremely optimistic about just what this year holds in terms of not the price, but sort of the adoption of crypto, not just BTC, because again, there's other altcoins that are quite popular and that are coming up that have functionality and use as well.
Okay, just to take you back on this whole Nigerian thing on crypto and Bitcoin.
Sure.
Apparently, Binance stopped accepting locally now. Actually, they stopped accepting M-Pesa deposits for crypto.
Why?
The main reason is that their payments processor, they weren't accepting the crypto or Bitcoin deposits directly via either their own M-Pesa.
Mm-hmm.
They were actually relying on a payment processor. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, all of you know Flutterwave.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So what happened is that Flutterwave stopped. Flutterwave actually cut them out,
mm-hmm.
I think because of the Nigerian regulations.
Yeah.
So initially, because Binance processed payments for Nigerian crypto, but then again in Kenya, I think that they extended that cut even up to the Kenyan market. So
yeah.
if you are a trader in Kenya and you want to participate using the Binance platform and you deposit via, let's say, Binance, they actually cut them out. Which, talking to a few, actually this week I talked to a few founders who are in the crypto space.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them said, look, we had even raised up to billions, millions,
mm-hmm.
of 100, total could be hundreds of millions,
mm-hmm.
In series, from pre-seed to series A to series B.
Mm-hmm.
But then what does that mean, that all of a sudden this regulation comes into place, gets you out of business?
Yeah.
So.
And I think it's a weird and interesting place to be, because now as a founder, do you keep working on your crypto product, or you do you pivot to something else, or you know, do you start lobbying for regulation and policy, given that again for you as a startup you don't have enough capital or enough muscle to actually lobby the regulators to allow crypto trading. Again, I don't know, Makanen, what you think?
You know, my biggest fear is that I know we'll actually, as you know, as African countries, including Nigeria, I know that we will get to a point where we'll actually work around our issues and get to adopt crypto and you know, BTC to be specific. My worry is by the time we get to that point, again, the wheel will be already spinning so fast. So the fact that we are hindering sort of innovations and adoption of cryptocurrency because of regulatory fears, if you might fears of CGO, cryptocurrencies have been used in money laundering and whatnot, means that we're not only disadvantaging investors who would be interested in that space,
yeah,
but also like companies who would develop innovative products around that.
Yeah.
And by the time we actually get to work around that, we are behind several years, if not decades.
Yeah, and I think that's the biggest fear that we all have, being left behind, you know, in some of these innovations. And we end up being consumers rather than participants in these economies. Yeah. Then I think today Felix is not here. So in honor of Felix and his and his weekly name and shame segment, I think I'd like to call out Senegal. So Senegal have shut down internet, Facebook, Twitter for protests by, you know, the public. And again, I want to echo what Rebecca Enonchong said a while back, that we should, that, you know, all these social platforms should block the accounts of all government leaders who at any time block the internet in their country, just as punishment for them to see what, you know, blocking internet and social media for their citizen looks like. And they should do that permanently, because it is not, in this day and age, we shouldn't be in a position whereby, you know, we have to shut down internet for you know, citizens just because of this content. So again, Senegal, I think that was a very, very terrible move by the government, and we hope that, you know, it's reinstated as soon as possible.
Now that you talked about internet, you know, Google, so
yeah.
They're not going to be phasing out that party cookies.
Yes.
From, is it next year? Okay,
2023.
2023. Thank
yeah.
you. What I have questions. Three important questions. Google is doing this to sort of position itself. How do we really believe, you know, Google will do that effectively? What will that mean for advertisers and companies in general that heavily rely on third party cookies?
Mm-hmm.
You know, just to advertise to customers, and I think you have a lot to say given your position. Three, I know that they're transitioning from third party cookies to first party cookies and sort of collecting data on users in a more group form rather than individual form. So grouping users into sort of blocks of interests. I can't remember the specifics, forgive me. But what will that mean for advertisers?
So, interestingly, I don't have a lot to share on this topic. Again, I would say is, for the common user, not much is going to change. But, so we live in a more privacy, all those regulations in place, companies are being forced to be more open about how, you know, they use your data and you're on the internet. So if you look at what Apple has recently done in iOS 14, is they're going to basically sort of turn off tracking. So in Apple, we have something called the ID, identifier, IDFA. So which basically is identifier that advertisers use to target you, you know, when you're in the internet. So basically, Apple is turning that off from iOS 14 and all their devices by default.
Okay.
So what that means is websites or even social media platforms like Facebook, and hence use that to target ads that are related to best targeting. So say an advertiser now would be able to say they want to tag you and, you know, check out port equipment and listen to Kenyan Street, you know, the likes. And Google would be able to use you, your user ID, to target you with an ad. But now where they're moving is brands will not be able to do that targeting. To choose interest, so say car lovers, you know, and you would all be grouped into a car lovers in Nairobi interest group.
So sort of
for targeting.
Access the customer, but more of
yes.
sets of demographics as
yes.
opposed to
individual
data of an individual.
Yes, because as you've since the Cambridge Analytica scandal, it was that point of using an individual psychographic sort of profiling that led to, you know, that all that US election fiasco and, you know, people using ads to then change, you know, how you interact or how you feel about a given candidate. So it's just moving away from that, abstracting all of that away, so that then advertisers will still be able to advertise to those people, but in those interest groups. So advertisers won't be given user details, they'll be given interests to advertise to. But again, as a user, it probably won't amount to much. You'll still see the same ads. You'd still be able to be shown the same ads, but from a privacy point of view, you'd actually be sharing less and less of your data with all of these big companies going forward.
Interesting. I think I don't have much knowledge on the ad tech space, but I think a question for Eric: what does that mean for the ad tech companies?
For ad tech companies, for Google, it means less revenue,
mm-hmm.
obviously,
mm-hmm.
because it's an industry built on precise targeting
mm-hmm.
of audiences. But I think for ad tech companies, it gives other ad tech companies
mm-hmm.
a chance to actually reduce the dominance of Google and Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you look at that space,
mm-hmm.
Google and Facebook are the behemoths. They control more than, let's say, 70% of, you know, the ad tech revenues,
mm-hmm.
The advertising revenues. So this would actually give the other smaller companies a better chance to actually grow and have more budgets than Google and Facebook, because again, they might go to other ways of tracking or other industry safe ways of advertising, which would be compliant with all the other ad tech firms. So it's something to watch out for in this year, especially because I know the Apple iOS 14 changes were pushed for, I think, for 6 more months,
okay.
but they're coming into effect soon. So that's something to watch out for.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I think we'll watch that space, and we'll end this episode here.
Mm-hmm.
But before we do, we definitely have to give shout outs to our listeners who joined us on various platforms. On Telegram, thank you so much for joining. Philip Mutevu, we see you. Mwanyumba Mark, Davis Kabinji, Gitogo Wandiri, GM, for which company we don't know, Steve, and Anka, for reasons beyond my understanding, Onome, Faithy Lukusi, Idolo, and of course, Erika Suma. Thank you so much for joining this discussion. And in case you do have any opinions, please share them with us directly. And the best way to share them would probably be via our Hisa app, which is a community that we're trying to build. So Hisa app is an app where you can access the latest market information and, of course, the latest podcast from the Kenyan Wall Street, and also get to share your views on investing and markets in general, as well as ask questions. It also happens to be our sponsor for this segment. So check out Hisa app on the Google Play Store and Apple Store. I think that's about it for today.
Yes, thank you very much for everyone who's downloaded HISA, and thank you for, you know, sharing your comments, complaints, you know, and suggestions on how to make the app better. We at HISA and Kenyan Wall Street would love to bring the best experience to you. And just something to mention, because we've had a lot of questions about opening an investor profile and being able to trade local and global shares. So just to clarify, at the moment on the app, you can be able to create your investor profile. There's been some people who have had challenges, but we are sorting that out, and we should push out an update soon. That update would also come with buying and selling of local stocks, so that's coming soon. We are also working on giving you access to US markets, which is already in development and should be ready soon. So stay tuned. There's a lot in store for you guys on the app. And as usual, share your thoughts and questions and comments and complaints on the chat and within the HISA app as well. Thanks, guys. Over and out. Felix, I don't know if you want to close this before we leave. I think Felix dropped off at some point. Yeah, but we can wrap this up.
Yeah, we can wrap it up.
Definitely. All right. Thank you for joining us. See you next Friday. Same time, same place. Goodbye.
Bye. Bye.